Check one, check two. Is the gravy ready to go? Check one, check two. Hello, hello. Hi, everybody. Okay. BB has to give Sidekick Bear CPR real quick. Yes, my cocaine-addicted bear just had a massive heart attack, and I had to, where is he? And I just had to revive him. Fortunately, Dr. Kaufman is about to get on the line. This is episode 807. Dr. Kaufman and I discuss turpentine, viruses, and the broken medical system. I am going to call him up now and get him on the line. And of course, as you can see, I'm wearing my medical jacket because a man of science can identify another man of science. Hang on 1 second, I'm making sure he's ready. Yeah, 1 second. Let me call Dr. Kaufman. Hang on. Sorry about the stutter step in the beginning. I just want to have a nice, clean interview and not just me rambling about winks from God for like 20 minutes. I'll talk about all that tomorrow. Tomorrow, same time, 9:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. I have an unbelievable story to tell you guys. And until then, we will call Dr. Kaufman and learn about turpentine, viruses, and whatnot. Here we go. My name's Steve. Your name's Frank. What? Are we rocking?
Yeah, I mean.
All right. Yeah. All right, my
Can
man.
Can you hear me?
How are you?
All right. How are you, Owen?
Good, dude. We're live. It's an honor to talk to you, brother. And because I know you are an accredited medical doctor, I addressed for the part because I want you to know that I'm also I'm also a man of science.
Oh, man, I would have got my stethoscope out.
I don't think you're telling the truth unless you have a stethoscope and a grant from Bill Gates. Dude, I just want to tell you, man, as somebody who's fought a beast out of Hollywood, I know what it – I can't even imagine what it would be like to go against the medical mainstream. So I have a – I'm coming in this thing with a lot of respect for you, my friend. So I want you to explain to us – the benefits of turpentine, viruses, and we have to talk about cocks. For those of you that... For those of you that don't know, there's something called the Cox Postulate. Only men of science like us know what that is, but he'll get to that. All right, man, how are you?
I'm doing great. Sweet. I've never been tireder.
You've been going hard, haven't you?
I have, yes.
Awesome, man. Well, first off... will you tell the people that turpentine is good for you?
Yeah, it certainly can be in the right amount, done the right way. Absolutely.
Please illuminate the people. Thank you.
Yeah, well, so, you know, I wouldn't talk about this unless I've done it myself because I don't, you know, ever talk to people about stuff that I haven't experimented with. So I know for sure, you know, how it works, what it's good for and such. But I learned about turpentine from Dr. Jennifer Daniels and I've done a lot of my own research and experimented. And I think it's one of the most powerful detoxification agents that's out there. And I know a lot of people think that it might like kill parasites or that kind of thing, but I don't really think it works that way. I think it works for its solvent properties because everything in our body, you know, is aqueous, means it's like water-based, right? I mean, our body's like 60 or 70% water, something like that, right?
Cheers.
Yeah, yeah, make sure you drink enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. One quart per 60-pound body weight a day. So there's like some sludge, I think, that gets stuck in our bodies from various sources, and the water just can't get at it for whatever reason. And I think this is the stuff that the parasitic organisms really like. They like, you know, splashing around in the slop and maybe eating it and such. So they hang around and sometimes cause problems when too much of it builds up. So I think that the turpentine just dissolves it away. And then, you know, once the home is gone, then, you know, all of the parasites or whatever that were hanging around, they've got no reason to hang around anymore. So they just go. And, you know, the first time I did this myself, I actually had worms in the toilet that I could see.
Whoa.
Yeah. Fortunately, they weren't moving around.
They were done. Yeah, and didn't it used to be a known medical thing that it had to be almost propagandized away? Like, wasn't that in medical journals that it was a medicine of sorts?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Merck manual is the biggest thing. Like, I don't know if you heard of the Merck manual, but it's like made by Merck Pharmaceutical, that huge, conglomerate.
Yeah.
And they've been around for a while. So they have this book, you know, comes out like every year, and it has every therapeutic agent that's known. And sometime, you know, after the Rockefeller and the Exner report, it switched over to only having pharmaceutical medications in there. But if you look at older versions of it, like the 1898 one, it has turpentine like as a treatment for over 60 different illnesses, and including being like one of the primary treatments for syphilis.
Whoa.
And many other conditions. Yeah.
That's cool.
So yeah, it's really awesome. So there's also like some literature from France. And then, you know, Dr. Daniels tells the story about back in the time of African slaves in our country, that they used this as a medicine. Because it was something they could make. It was very cheap. It's just, you know, distilled pine sap, basically. And when the slave master or someone in their family was really sick and, you know, nothing was getting them better, they would supposedly go to the slaves and ask for the turpentine.
Wow. Yeah, that, yeah. I've read up on that. There's this one African-American professor who actually was reporting about how a lot of slaves would live longer than their masters because they had a better diet, they worked outside, and he was studying this, and of course he got fired from his university because that went, because God forbid someone talks about how, you know, a lot of times the masters, just like in the book by Tolstoy, A Confession, over there they were just called serfs, but it was a similar relationship, where they would seek out the serfs to get medical treatment because their aristocratic cosmopolitan lifestyle, they were dying 20, 30 years before the slaves, because the slaves were actually eating raw food, being outside, all this stuff. It's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, well, I mean, even like in old times, like the royals who would, you know, experience gluttony because of their resources, like, you know, like Henry VIII is most famous for this, but they had terrible health. You know, they would die young because of that, you know, rich living. And it was really like the Industrial Revolution that kind of changed things for us. And, you know, food became manufactured in a factory and, you know, industrial chemicals were used and permeate, you know, our environment, pretty much air, water and soil. So that's really had a bad effect. And, you know, so we need turpentine now more than ever. And the fact that they made it illegal, you know, the FDA, I think somewhere in the 40s, they decided to ban it from any medicinal products. But there's one exception. I don't know if you know about this, but there's one product still on the market that has turpentine, but they have to kind of hide it because they got grandfathered in. And so it's on the outer box. You could see it listed as an inactive ingredient, but on the tub itself, it's not on the label at all. And the product is Vicks VapoRub.
Wow. Yeah. Cause turpentine would do well with that. I can see that.
Yeah. So if you like, let's say you can experiment with this because this is totally, you know, not like taking turpentine internally, but just like, you know, next time you have a mosquito bite or your kid has a mosquito bite, put just a dab of Vicks on there and then look at it 3 or 4 hours later and you'll see it's completely gone.
What is the mechanism? Cause I'm seeing this now. I used to feel more oppressed by the elites. What is the mechanism to make them? Because I no longer do. What's the mechanism?
Really?
I really
you
don't.
Mean, you mean the lockdown hasn't affected you?
Not. I've been in quarantine for years, my friend. I have a homestead, my friend.
Well, what are you going to spread?
when everybody was stocking up on toilet paper, I was like, quick, cover crop seeds. You know, I'm just not in that world at all. But
just use some leaves. Is that it?
Well, yeah. I mean, we make all our friends are cool. You know, we have play dates here. We have some acreage, some goats, chickens, alpacas, green, you know, I saw this coming years ago because I was a Hollywood comedian that had been in movies and on television shows and all this. And because of my opposition to trans children, trans hormones with children, I got banned from every comedy club, and they had my picture on the walls.
Really?
And I was, it was fascinating. And so it sucked, but I experienced my economic collapse years ago. And so I'm here as a time traveler to tell everybody everything will be fine. They're burning away stuff you don't need. And always remember, everything requires consent. Everything. I know dudes that don't have social security numbers. So it's like, everything will be okay as long as you understand what you may have to go without. And that's pretty much just convenience and approval from horrible people. You know? Why don't you tell the people your story? How did you become somebody who could actually talk about viruses? And what's your background? And how did this all happen?
Yeah, well, I mean, I have somewhat of a pretty traditional medical background. You know, I went to MIT as an undergrad. I worked in public health for a little while. I actually reported AIDS cases for a CDC position in New York City. And then I went to PA school and worked in cancer medicine for 2 years, like with really, really sick people, like with acute leukemia and people like that.
Yeah.
Then I went to medical school in South Carolina, and then I decided to specialize in psychiatry. And I did that training at Duke, and then subspecialized in forensic psychiatry, which is like being an expert witness, more or less, maybe working in that correctional setting. And as I was, practicing psychiatry, I just realized that these drugs that were supposed to prescribe to everybody, they don't really do anything good.
Yeah,
I mean, there's some rare exceptions, but they're rare.
So you're saying AZT isn't the AIDS patient's best friend?
Well, you know, there's a drug in psych that's like AZT, because AZT was like put on the shelf because it was too toxic. I think it was developed as a cancer drug. And so there's a drug in psychiatry like that. It's called clozapine. And it was like way too toxic to use. And then somehow they got the idea that it might help people with schizophrenia. And, you know, they told me that actually this was like a miracle drug, that like it would turn someone with schizophrenia into a regular person again. Right.
Yeah.
And but I was too afraid to use it because it causes like the same thing as chemo, like where your white count is low and you can get bad infections, and then it can cause like sudden cardiac death and heart failure and all these really nasty things. So, but then I saw people later on in my practice, like several people who were on it. Some of them I had to like take over prescribing for a period of time. And I didn't see anybody have any miracle. Not once, but I did see people get really sick from it.
Yeah.
And I saw people gain a ton of weight and be drooling, and like their whole shirt was all soaking wet. I mean, imagine walking around like that every day as an adult. That's got to be like torture.
What did you see at the cancer places? Like, were the cancer treatments just not working?
No, well, they basically destroyed the person's immune system and other parts of their body. And then they would get really, really sick and then recover. And then the cancer may not be as strong right after they recover. But then it would just come back in, a couple of weeks, couple of months, maybe 6 months at the most for some of the less aggressive diseases like multiple myeloma.
Yeah.
And, nobody was cured from chemotherapy at all. Everyone died eventually. There's a couple of rare forms of cancer that have like a biologic treatment. Like there's this one kind of leukemia that's called promyelocytic leukemia. And you actually treat it with this like high dose vitamin A preparation, because there's like some gene mutation in vitamin A metabolism. And so people were practically cured from that. I mean, they went into full remissions and went back to a normal life. But that wasn't with the toxic chemo. That was with the retinoic acid, vitamin A derivative.
Yeah, but you can't patent that and use it against people.
Well, see, that's the thing. They couldn't just give you like carrots or liver like I would do now.
Yeah.
They had to make like a special pharmaceutical version of it. It was called ATRA, or all trans retinoic acid.
Yeah.
But I always wondered, was that really necessary, or was it just more profitable than a regular vitamin A pill?
What's the best thing someone with cancer should do, or someone to avoid cancer? Like, is there just a? Because I heard you talking to Crow about how diabetes type 2 can be cured with diet completely, and that just blew my mind. What's the best way to deal with cancer, you think?
Well, cancer cancer is not quite as simple because but it's totally misunderstood. Like, cancer is actually your body's mechanism of trying to save you from death, because you build up too much toxic crap, basically, and cancer is a way to contain it. But unfortunately, like, if you don't do anything about it, it'll get overwhelmed and then, you know, spread around your body. Like, it can't contain it forever.
Yeah.
So the earlier that you make changes to your lifestyle, the better off you are. And you definitely, I mean, if you pay attention to what you're putting in your body and on your body, you can, you know, massively reduce the risk of cancer.
Yeah, because doesn't sunblock have heavy metals in it that cause skin cancer?
Well, there's some interesting studies that show that, like, you know, because it used to be thought, or it was told to me, like, in my medical training, that if you get bad sunburns as a kid, that it increases your chance of getting melanoma, which is the bad skin cancer that could kill you as an adult. And I went back and looked at some of those studies after I started, you know, seeing things differently and studying different types of medicine. And what I found is that it's actually the sunscreen is much more likely that causes the cancer to occur later on, not the sunburns.
Did cancer did cancer exist before the 1900s very often, or no?
Well, you know, people, there were many things that didn't exist back then in the same ways. You know, like one really interesting thing has to do with our teeth, that, like, back then people, they had room for their wisdom teeth. Like, they didn't get them out. There's no, like, ancient wisdom teeth extraction surgeries,
right,
you know?
Right.
It's like, but people had bigger jaws. And Weston A. Price was the first one. He was a dentist or a forensic odontologist, and he went around and studied, like, the fossil record and interviewed people in indigenous cultures and such, and, you know, found that after that we started making food in factories, that we started missing certain nutrients that allowed the bone growth to develop fully.
That's amazing. I never even thought of that. Like, what did they do before people ripped out your wisdom teeth? Wow.
Yeah, people had straight teeth too, because most of the crooked teeth is because there's not enough room in your jaw for all your teeth. And so they get crowded together. And that's why, like, they always want to pull kids' teeth to give them straight teeth.
Whoa. What is the nutrient that people are missing?
Well, so there are three nutrients, according to Weston Price's study. It's vitamin A, vitamin D, and vitamin K2. And K2 is kind of a key one because it's normally in meat if the meat is raised on its natural food, like ruminants, like cows that eat grass. In grass, there's vitamin K1, which is like the vitamin K shot that they want to give to babies right after they're born. That's for blood clotting. But vitamin K2 is a totally different vitamin. It has to do with your mineral regulation in your bones and such, like, you know, putting calcium and phosphate in there or taking it out, like bone remodeling. And so when the cow eats the grass, they convert that K1 in the grass to K2, and then you eat that meat, you get the K2. But if they eat, like, corn and soy, you know, feed, then there's no K1 in there, so there's no K2 in the meat.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
And we have some of the best grass in Washington. It's our orchard.
What kind of grass is that?
No, the grass that we grow for our animals here, the orchard grass, is, like, unique to the world. They ship it all over the world because the high, I believe, the vitamin K in it. So that's really interesting.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that is cool. Yeah, because the cows use the vitamin K2. Like, they make their own, and they use it too. It's like they don't just make it so we get it in their meat.
Is it also in chicken like that, or is it just red meat?
I think it is, but I, you know, don't quote me on that for sure. But it's also, you can get vitamin K2 in fermented vegetables.
Yeah, like kimchi.
Especially like natto has a really high concentration. It supposedly it smells, you know, awful. Like, they have a special room in restaurants for people to eat that in China. It's some kind of fermented soy product.
Because of your recommendation, I actually got that Himalayan minerals black goo stuff.
Oh, Shilajit.
Yeah, I dig it.
Yeah, you do?
Yeah, totally.
How do you like the taste of it?
I don't mind it. It tastes earthy, but I...
Earthy.
Yeah, you were when you were talking about the minerals that you're missing, I was like, I really want to get involved in that. because, you know, that's what we're doing here. We have raw goat milk and we grow our food and stuff and have a well pump. And we're trying to do the best we can to get Babylon out of our system. You know, my wife and I used to live in L.A. I was there 16 years, road comedian, you know, tedious lifestyle. So, but we're seeing a lot of good stuff. Like our kids, I'm very tall, but our kids are definitely in the high brackets of height, which I saw a decline in out there because I think nutrition. So, yeah. You know, she breastfed for a while for all of them. And, you know, we're really trying to reconnect to our own health once we realized how broken the medical system was, which is what I'd love to talk to you about even just the nature of a virus. I think this COVID-19 thing is doing a service. It's almost like Caitlyn Jenner, where it's so when Caitlyn Jenner was Woman of the Year, I think about 10 million pupils just went wide and could see things they could never see before. I think that's happening with these face masks. And I would love for you to ladle the gravy, as we say here, and let the people know what a virus is, how it's spread, and what do you think. And this is when we can talk about the Cox postulate. I was checking out your video from earlier. Just educate the people, my friend.
Yeah, well, what I really think is that when, you know, that they had this idea that there was some unseen, like, small germ of some kind that was causing the diseases that they couldn't explain at the time, right? Like polio, myelitis is one of those diseases. But since they had this, like, idea that they knew it was a virus and they knew it was some tiny thing, they called it a virus even before they ever saw a particle, that when they first, you know, saw through the electron microscope, which was a new technology, they saw the particle and they're like, there it is. There's the virus that's causing all these diseases. And they didn't say, wow, look, they're tiny particles. I wonder what they are.
Right.
And so they never investigated what they are, right? They just assumed they're causing disease, but they actually couldn't meet the criteria to prove that, which is Koch postulates. But later on, only 30 years ago now, because viruses were discovered in the 1930s, I believe, and or the particles. But then about 30 years ago, like in the 80s or the 90s, they discovered exosomes. And exosomes look just like viruses under the microscope, and they have the same structure, and they have genetic material, all the varieties that they said viruses had, but they come from our own cells. And our cells, every kind of cell in our body, every cell in every mammal, all produce these, and they're producing them all the time. But if certain things happen, like they get exposed to a toxin like antibiotics or heavy metals or ionizing radiation, or they have like psychological stress, like pretty much anything that would make you sick, our bodies start putting out more and more exosomes, right? So what I think really happened is that all along when they discovered these particles, they were always exosomes. But they never looked at the possibility that they could come from our own bodies. But the virologists had some thoughts about this, because in that talk I mentioned this guy Rivers, and he wrote this paper in 1937 where he modified Koch postulates to specifically be for viruses. And in this paper, he wrote two things. He wrote that that there's uncertainty about what viruses really are. And he said that they're highly associated with the host cells, which would basically be our cells, right? And that they could represent, he used this term like autocatalytic processes. But what he was referring to, I think, is programmed cell death, which we now call apoptosis. It was discovered much later, but it's basically when a cell is too old or something's wrong with it, and it just undergoes like auto-destruct sequence. Right. So it's different than when like some toxin comes in and fries the cell. That's called necrosis.
Right.
But this apoptosis, this program thing, it forms these blebs, and they're tiny little vesicles that look just like exosomes. They contain different things in exosomes, but they look, you know, also like the way viruses look, because viruses and exosomes look the same. So even in 1937, this prominent virologist was basically saying, you know, they could be our own parts of our own body. We're not really sure.
Right.
But that idea never really got explored in research.
Yeah, didn't the vaccine guy, wasn't he like, too late, I just killed my son with this weird experiment.
Oh, you're talking about Jenner?
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy was nuts to like, he's the, you know, the first one to invent the vaccine. And they basically, it's called vaccine because of cowpox, which was vaccinia. So it comes from, you know, the root for cow, Baca, right? Yeah. Which is related to cattle and chattel, interestingly. And because we get vaccines like we're the cattle,
right.
And herd immunity fits in with that linguistic paradigm. But yeah, he basically just took the pus out of cowpox lesions from sick cows, and then, you know, made a small slice in your skin and put the pus right in there. I mean, what a bad idea! And so he did this to his son. Was one of the first people, and his son ended up like crippled.
Yeah, no, and then they didn't. How much of this is just blind hubris, where it's like, we see something, we have a theory, run with it, inject everyone, and how much of it is nefarious psychopathy? Like, how much of this is just human error where no one will admit they were wrong until it just snowballs into complete psychosis? Or how much is like, oh, we're going to get everyone sick, oh, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's hard to tell, but, you know, a lot of people, at least hundreds of thousands, died from Jenner's work.
Yeah.
Of course, it wasn't recorded that way in the history books. But if you go to like the, you know, the Royal Academy of Sciences archives, you can find the statistics of how many people died, way more than died of smallpox, died after they were receiving this so-called vaccination. But, you know, if you want to talk about sort of nefarious intent, I think you should mention Louis Pasteur, because he was a guy that didn't really have an original idea in his career, and he got all the credit for germ theory. And basically, he was just hobnobbing around the aristocracy and the government, and he would steal ideas from other scientists like Antoine Bechamel, who was like a serious scientist. He just wanted to figure out what was going on. And then Pasteur would like misinterpret the experiments, or he would conduct them in a like sensationalist way. Like, he did this one where he toured around to all the vineyards like in wine country in southern France and collected air samples to do his repeat, basically, Bechamel's fermentation experiment. You know, but he had reporters and you know, the there every time he visited a vineyard, and he would do this thing where he put the air in the bottle, right. And you know, it's just showmanship.
It's like Edison. That's what Edison, off the back of Tesla. Tesla's like, I just discovered something beautiful. Edison's like, electrocute an elephant. And everyone's like, what? He's like, show the people pain. Yeah, no, these people are littered throughout our history where you have a genius and you have people actually doing stuff, and then they skim the top, they steal it, and then they're usually very good at marketing, like the Bernays type, where then they just shove it out with this brilliant wizardry to get everyone to poison themselves, you know?
Oh, totally.
And I was thinking about Turing. I was listening to you and James True's. I love James True. He's become a good buddy of mine. Your discussion of germ theory versus terrain theory. And it dawned on me, I was always buddies with this dude, Jesse Spencer, who played Dr. Chase on the show Dr. House, if you've ever seen it. And it dawned on me, the whole thing's terrain theory. So you have Dr. House, which is backwards for house doctor, and he's always sending everyone to break into their house to see what toxins are there and what they're eating. And that's how he cracks the code. And they paint him.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, it was like the most... It was the biggest show for like 15 years or 12 years. And it's this hour-long show, and you have this like madman Dr. House played by Hugh Laurie, and he only focuses on terrain theory. No, it's never germ. Like, this one episode, this male porn star was constantly getting sick. And there's a true story. And it turned out it was because his mother never let him play in dirt. He was never exposed to dirt growing up. It was one of these ironies, you know? And then it was always about... It was like, find his cat, test his cat. You know, what is there a radon, blah, blah, blah. And then if you go to an actual medical practice, it's your body's the problem, nuke it with poison. And I'm like, what is that psychologically about people that we're almost drawn to the truth of terrain theory because we're living in this germ theory madness? I think germ theory is almost just based on how people hated Germans, because it was the 30s. You know, people were like, germ. Like, I don't know what motivates people, but watching the COVID-19 thing is pure madness. And what do you see going on right now? Give us some more gravy.
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, first of all, like the Germany thing was always weird because, you know, they call it Deutschland.
Right.
So how do we get Germany from that?
Right.
But germ, actually the root of germ means a bud or a new growth. So like in biology, the germ cells is like the sperm and the egg.
Germinate.
Right. Yeah, it's what makes a new life. Right. So it's sort of weird to like then invert the meaning to something that, you know, invades your body and causes disease. So, you know, that pattern is so common, right? Like everything's inverted. It's the same thing with turpentine, right? They say it's poison when actually it's medicine.
Yeah.
Right?
Dude, it's everywhere. The sunblock causes skin cancer. The bank is destroying your dower. The school is teaching your kids sodomy. It's like the whole world is flipped. You know, it's kind of like, freedom is slavery. Slavery is freedom. You know, it's like feminism has become a 40-year-old with no family working to pay off an unpayable debt. It's like, what is that? You know, and I wonder how much of this we're doing to ourselves, because I try to always think, who is this they everyone keeps speaking of? Like, is Bill Gates just a random weirdo that somehow has been drawn into the global consciousness because somehow people want to wear masks out of shame? Does that sound like a theory that could roll? I just don't understand it, you know?
Well, you know, all these guys, I mean, I don't think they're the ones in charge like Bill Gates. I think he's more like a spokesperson, right?
Yeah.
But just look at all these people who are up there. You know, like I just saw a thing that Fauci was on the board of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, or the Clinton Foundation, for like 10 years, right? And then they're connected to Gates as well. So it's like, you know, there's like this club.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, it's more than that. I'm sure they're involved in some sadistic rituals.
Yeah.
But you know, they're all connected and they're all playing the game, whatever it is. You know, and we're just here to sit and wait for the next move, or you know, or be just sheep.
No, more like vacas. Cow.
Yeah, vacas.
It's like, so what do you recommend for people to deal with all this stuff? Like, what is the best way to handle a medical world that, because there is good people, you know, there is good people in medicine. There's people trying to save lives in medicine. They just have a few fundamental groundwork, logical problems happening. What do you think is the best thing people can do to protect themselves and their families moving forward with all this?
Yeah, well, I think actually staying away from the healthcare system, because even though there are good, you know, well-meaning people there, lots of them, right? It's the majority. Like, there's not too many people that just, you know, sit around and say, how can I make money off these folks? But there are those people too, for sure. But the thing is, it's like what they don't really have autonomy over what they do. They have to follow the standard of care to keep their license.
Yeah.
Right. Which is, this is all this risk I'm taking. Right. I mean, I can talk about these things, but I can't, you know, I can't have a doctor patient relationship with someone and recommend turpentine, because I would lose my license very quickly.
Wow.
Right. Because I'm not following the standard of care. So every doctor has to do that. Otherwise, they'll be punished or they'll be sued. And so they really have no choice. If they're going to continue work in that career, they have to do it. And if you go to the hospital or the doctor's office, you're basically be agreeing to be part of that. Right. And they're going to pressure you to do things that you don't want. And you're going to be in a very uncomfortable situation. Like, you know, imagine you go in there with a laceration and you want to get some stitches. Boy, they are going to hound you to take a tetanus vaccine. You know, they are not. And even sometimes they just do it without even asking. Like my buddy was telling me about this when he had a baby, and he, you know, instructed them, and he had it in the hospital, right? And instructed them, he's like, I don't want any injections for this child. And then he turned his back for 1 second, and there's a nurse sticking him with an injection.
Yeah, they're obsessed with it. Because it's backwards. It's because it must be right, because if not, they'd be wrong, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, what's a license, right? You mentioned some law stuff before, right? What really is a license? It is permission, you know, from the government to do something that's illegal. If you jab someone with a needle, that's assault.
Right.
Right? Unless you have a license to do so, then you could do it legally.
Wow. So, but isn't that just going to water down the value of a license? It's almost like, back in the day, it's like, oh, you're gonna have your MySpace account deleted. You know, it's like at a certain tipping point, it became like, I don't care. You know, it's kind of like now I know how to tour without comedy clubs. I can do airplane hangers, any space. You can just set up an audio setup, and I could actually make more money than I did before. I'm starting to realize that a lot of these licensing type scams, you can make a better living, a more honest living, a healthier living if you don't comply with them, because they can't control you. They can just get you to submit, you know?
Well, I think, you know, that may be generally true, and there's certainly a lot of ways to make a living. But, you know, with doctors, they put you through this long training, and there's all this delayed gratification and big student loan debt. Yeah. You know, I think something like $200,000 is the average student loan debt. Yeah. You know, when I got out of my training, I basically had a mortgage payment in student loan debt, you know, before I had a house. And so then, you know, you finally get to the point where you're making some real money and you buy a house, you know, you buy a car, you know, you get your wife a gift if you're a guy, and then you build up more debt. And so you have to keep working to pay that off. And if you want to get out, like, there's not an immediately obvious way for doctors to make a living out of the system, because everybody is, you know, uses the system. There are very few people that are outside of it. I mean, I hope that's growing now, because I'm trying to build a consultation practice using natural healing methods. And, you know, when people do that, they're cured from diseases that the regular system says they're going to suffer for the rest of their life from.
Bro, I'd go to you over a doctor. If I had a giant lump, I'd be like, here's a bar of gold, cure me. Like, because people don't trust the shit anymore. Like, once you realize the vaccine has fetus cells, like, can you tell the people what's in a vaccine?
Oh my gosh. Well, there's the things that are reported in there, and then there's the things that are in there that are not reported. Yeah. But there's preservatives, like some contain mercury, things like polysorbate 80 are in there. There is aluminum hydroxide is the big thing. That's I think the most toxic thing that's in almost every vaccine. And basically the reason it's there is because it gives such a shock to your immune system that it makes a lot more antibodies because it's so toxic.
Yeah.
So that's in there, and that causes most of the disease, I think, from vaccines. But there's also DNA in there. So, like, there's different DNAs. Even from some of it is from an aborted fetus.
Yeah, that's a fact. People won't allow themselves to believe it, but that's a fact. Like, the diseases.
You can find, like, testimony in front of Congress where the doctor who is doing that research tells that's in there. So it's totally verifiable. It's not some wives' tale. It's really there.
Yeah. And so when do the diseases kick in? Like, let's say you get vaccinated as a baby. Is the response that year, or like 40 years later, do you get something? How does that work?
Well, you know, it's interesting because it could happen either way. And Forrest Moretti is a guy I definitely recommend people check out, because he's written 4 books on basically related to vaccines. One is called Crooked, The Real Cause of Man-Made Disease. And definitely start with that one. But he's looked at the history and the science related to vaccine-induced morbidities, and going back, you know, well into the early 1800s. And so what he talked about is really fascinating, that when you have like an acute injury or an acute illness, your immune system responds to the site of the injury, but it also responds to your brain. And it's like a backup thing, like, you know, because it needs some input from the brain to coordinate things or something like that. So it always goes up there. And, you know, when I was in medical school, they taught us that there's no lymphatic system in the brain. And the lymphatic is the blood. They're like a third set of blood vessels that our immune system uses to travel around our body. And they only discovered that it exists in the brain in like the early 2000s. So that's the way that the immune system can respond up there. And it turns out it goes right by the cranial nerve nuclei. And those are the nerves that control like all of the functions of your head and neck. And then some other ones like your vagus nerve, which controls digestion and some other things. And so basically, if you have a situation where it's like a kid that's been vaccinated before and they don't like it, and they have to go in and get like 3 or 4 needles, And it's like they're screaming and moving around, and like the mom and the nurse are like holding them down and jabbing them in the thighs. That is causing trauma right there from the injections. So in that case, what they're going to do is they're going to have that response right away, and they're going to take that aluminum from the injection and bring it right to the brain right then. And that's when you can see, like, basically the next day the kid is not the same in some way. And it could be subtle, where they have like a crooked face, like the one side of their smile is turned down, or their eyes are uneven in some way. It could manifest a lot of other different ways with the cranial nerves. But they also may have, you know, like just, you know, like be autistic in a day or have some other neurologic problem like that.
Yeah.
If they get the injection and it's not a traumatic thing in and of itself, then what your body does is it walls it off right in the skin under the injection site in something called a granuloma. And that's a protective measure, because your body, like we didn't, you know, whether you believe in evolution or design, like we weren't built with metals like aluminum in our environment. That only came from like mining and industry.
Yeah.
Right. So there's some arsenic in the soil, and maybe we could deal with that a little better. But you know, the body, like when it gets in your body, like the immune system says, gosh, we don't really know what the heck to do with this. Let's just keep it walled off so it won't, you know, mess anything up. And those granulomas can stay there for years and years. And then there could be some other event that basically causes them to get disrupted, and then they could be piggybacked on the immune cells to a different part of your body, like responding to something. And like this can happen during pregnancy a lot, because a lot of times after or during pregnancy is when someone will get like rheumatoid arthritis, for example.
Yeah.
And that has to do with the joints relaxing to allow the pelvis to expand for the delivery. And it maybe brings your immune system to the joints, and it piggybacks the aluminum there and then causes issues.
Is there, let's say somebody is vaccine injured, is there ways to heal? Is there ways to get past it, to detox?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's actually my number one priority doing this kind of consulting work, is that I'm trying to develop a protocol to do just that. It's not an easy thing to do. Like even in the mainstream medicine, they have like, you know, IV chelation. And there's some like doctors like Dr. Batar, who's very outspoken now about COVID and, you know, is a good guy. I think he does IV chelation with this. And, you know, there's some success, but it's a difficult thing. It's a long thing. There, with going that route, there's some risks of damaging the kidneys and other problems. So I'm trying to use natural means, but there are, you know, some very potent medicines out there that can help with this. And, you know, turpentine is one of them. People have definitely had success with turpentine and with Miracle Medical, Miracle Mineral Solution, MMS, you know, ethylene oxide.
Wow.
So, you know, but there's other things like, you know, I'm very interested in spagyrics. Yeah, you know anything about that?
A little bit. Yeah, go on. Is that about vibration?
It's the medicinal branch of alchemy.
Yeah.
So like the principle is that you know, you have something natural and you break it down into its component parts and you purify those components and then you recombine it into something new. So you take, you know, a plant and into its component parts, which is like the spirit, the mercury and the salt, which is like the liquid in the body, and the spirit is the alcohol. And you can then recombine them once you purify those elements into, like, let's say a tincture would be the simplest spagyric preparation. And it could be very potent as a medicine. And it will enhance the medicinal effects of that plant rather than just taking it, you know, raw or dried, which is often, you know, good enough for many things. So, like, that's one thing that I'm very hopeful that's going to be effective. But there's, you know, other things like that are basically natural chelators, or sometimes they're called binding agents, like zeolite and bentonite clay, diatomaceous earth, and a few others. And so those things could be useful. But it's one challenge is that you can get those things in the gut, but you can't get them in the blood. And so if you want to suck the metals out of like the tissues, you can't do that directly through the gut. So you need some other way to liberate them. And one of the things that's really effective is actually the Shilajit. because what your body does is, like, it uses all these metals, like they call them trace minerals, but they're really metals. But they're not the toxic metals. They're metals that our body needs, and they act like cofactors in with different proteins, like some of them for enzymes, or they change the shape, like just like iron in hemoglobin, like the iron binds the oxygen, right? And, you know, we need iron in our diet, and it's a metal. So all these other metals do similar things with other proteins in your body. But when you're deficient in them, the body kind of makes do with what's available. So if you have some lead hanging around or some mercury or some aluminum, it might substitute for the metal that it desires in the protein, so it can function maybe not as optimally, but it can still function. So when you replenish the trace minerals, what happens is they're more thermodynamically favored, so they pop in there and displace all the toxic ones. And so that frees up the toxic ones to get in the blood. And then if you, you know, have good detox routes open, you can hopefully get them out of your body completely.
Do some people not get affected by vaccines? Do some people just flush it when they get shot? Because my kids, I used to trust everyone with a lab coat and was in crippling debt. So my kids got vaccines, but they seem healthy. Do some people just flush it, or is it always in there?
Well, you know, some people definitely, you know, do not really get affected by this. And, you know, I can't tell you the individual factors, but it could have to do with, you know, their lifestyle or even simple things like how often, you know, they use the bathroom at the time, you know, they're getting the shots. Yeah. So those things, you know, people are resilient, of course, but it can actually hang around in your body and cause disease much later. Yeah. And then also, like, there could be very subtle signs that you wouldn't pick up on. Like, there was this Dr. Andrew Molden, and he was a pioneer in this. He was one of the first people to recognize these very subtle cranial nerve injuries that would cause, like, slight crookedness in various facial features. And he actually developed a way of, like, looking at photographs and using a computer to measure these very subtle asymmetries. And he could basically detect, like, when you had a subtle injury. That, you know, even he couldn't see just observing you with his eyes, even though he's very skilled. And he would do this thing where, like, if you, let's say you got ill later in life and you had baby pictures or child pictures from, like, before and after a vaccine, he could do this analysis on those photographs and show that the injury occurred from the vaccine, even though it might have been 20 or 30 years ago. And I think this really scared some people high up, because he kind of suddenly died in the prime of his life after being very healthy.
Yeah.
In the midst of this.
Yeah. Do you think that that people that reveal this stuff, they get on some weird Hillary Clinton list?
Oh, well, you know, there's if you go and search, like, for natural healers who mysteriously died, you can find quite a long list. You know, I have personal knowledge of one of these people. I won't say their name, but they were basically curing people of cancer. And they got a phone call saying, basically telling them that if you don't stop doing this, we're going to kill you. And about a year later, this person just had a sudden heart attack, even though they were healthy. And, you know, the CIA has this heart attack gun. And this is also, you could see congressional testimony describing it from, like, the 80s. And it basically is some kind of micro dart that has, you know, some kind of toxin that stops your heart. And but it's so small that it can't really be detected unless you know exactly what you're looking for.
Yeah. That's interesting, man. It's so crazy that there's that many people that are in the business of keeping people sick. But I mean, it runs its course, though. It's like it's getting to the point of madness. Every criminal enterprise enters the madness clown world Ponzi scheme section. And I think we're seeing that right now, where people are like, what's your threshold? 100 vaccines? 200? You know, how many every kid has autism? Like, when does it end, you know?
Yeah, well, there are some people who have speculated, actually, that they would want everyone to be mildly autistic.
Because they make great soldiers.
Yeah, perhaps. Or you could just direct their activities in one narrow area and they wouldn't, you know, be bored. Because, like, one of the things that can happen with autism is they kind of get obsessive about a certain subject that they're interested in. And yeah. they... are not interested in anything else besides that subject. And that could be useful for, you know, for a worker or a debt slave to be that way.
Totally. That's why
you have to get it just right.
It's all about it. Yeah, I know. They're trying to fine tune it. I think it's all about decentralizing knowledge where people just get, it's almost like how the Koreans, they just kind of eat kimchi and stretch. You know, I just think if Americans especially just lived a healthier lifestyles, they wouldn't have to deal with this beast as much, you know?
Well, yeah, that could make all the difference. But, you know, it's hard because if you go to the supermarket, you know, they basically only make money on the bad stuff. The stuff around the edge of the supermarket, you know, the meat and produce, they don't make much money. It's all the processed food in the middle that gets all the profits, and they know how to direct you there, right? And you know, it's like you get addicted to the sugar and stuff like that. And people just, you know, they expect that when they're sick, someone else heals them. They don't think that, oh, I should take responsibility. Like this is, you know, it's like the law of cause and effect. I always think about the seven hermetic principles. They apply so much to health. And cause and effect, you know, when you're eating processed food and sugar and diet soft drinks and, you know, drinking beer and smoking Marlboros, like, of course, that's going to have an effect on your body. It's going to make you sick. You know, it's like we all know that on some level. Right. But then we go to the hospital and it's like the doctor maybe knows that, too. But they feel like, oh, well, I'll be like insulting them if I tell them that, you know, but it's like, but that's the truth. Like, that's the only thing that you can really change to get healthy. I mean, what about this bariatric surgery? What a crazy, crazy thing. Let's make your stomach so small that you can't eat normally so you lose weight instead of just changing what you eat.
Yeah, I knew a guy who did that and then he died. It's not very effective. It's
No.
And the commercials for the drugs are clown world too, where it's just like, do you have tingling in your hands? And then the side effects are like, your dick may fall off. You may contemplate suicide. You'll jump out of a building. You'll feel like you're on fire all the time. And I laughed out loud today listening to one of those ads, because I rarely even hear ads because I don't watch TV. But I was listening to a YouTube video and one of these ads came up. And I just don't see how people still fall for it. I think it's getting less and less people are falling for it. But this, do you have any final thoughts on this big push for this new vaccine and Bill Gates and COVID and how people can survive it? Because I don't want to put people in a bummer feeling like if you try to heal yourself, they're going to get you with a heart attack on. You know, it's like
no. Get me, not you. Don't worry about that.
Right. As long as you don't patent stuff, I think you'll be fine. Just don't patent anything. The patents is how that's when the heart attack gun gets loaded.
Well, you know, listen, there are definitely things you could do to mitigate the toxicity from a vaccine, but I don't think that's the approach that I recommend. The approach I recommend is to not accept the vaccine. You know, I mean, you have a right to determine what is put in your body. Yeah. And I know that there might be people who, by force, infringe upon that right. And if someone holds you down and gives you a shot and there's nothing you can do, I mean, I'll definitely give you a recipe that can help. But I think, you know, if enough of us say no, then they're not going to be able to overcome that because there's only a few of them.
Oh, 100%. You know? Yeah, I oddly understand the playbook of being a global tyrant. I don't know why, but there's so few of them that you have to do it to yourself. It has to do with shame and manipulation. Like there's like three. There's like nobody doing it. So many people do it to themselves to self-soothe because they're scared. Like these masks, people want to wear the mask. I'm starting to realize that it's not the government doing it to people. It's people, for whatever reason, are because they'll throw these things out all the time, and if people don't bite, it just falls apart. And now people are biting, even though no one can name one person who died of something that doesn't really exist. Do you think vaccines have gotten more dangerous or less dangerous since the cowpox days and DDT and polio? Because I feel like it used to be worse, oddly, with DDT and shit, you know, with the polio vaccine.
Well, you know, I don't think they put DDT in the vaccine, but DDT was one of the factors that caused polio.
Exactly.
I mean, you're right. There was, like, when they made the diphtheria toxin, it wasn't exactly the same. It was like passive because they would actually give the vaccine to horses and then they would give horse serum to humans. And that caused like serum sickness, which was pretty bad. It's like having like a transfusion reaction. And so we don't see that particular thing anymore. But I would say, you know, like with the increasing amount of injections that are required and that children are getting, that's what is responsible for the increased disease and death. I mean, vaccines kill people too. Like it's pretty well known now that they're like that shaken baby syndrome or sudden infant death syndrome. Yeah. That's really sudden death from vaccines.
Yeah, totally. People, I never understood that. It's like sudden infant death syndrome. It's like, how? Like, was it the vaccine? And it really is up to us to protect ourselves because they won't tell us for obvious reasons, you know?
Yeah, well, so like the CDC actually, you know, because there's this voluntary reporting system for vaccine adverse events. It's called VAERS, VAERS-S.
Yeah.
And you can actually go in there and like pull up all the data if you want, but they have it in like a spreadsheet form, you know, like comma separated values. So it's not user friendly, but it's a voluntary system. So the CDC paid some research.
Hello, hello. Am I going? All right. Sorry about that, guys. One second. So, sorry about that, my friend. My computer died. I was riding it to the edge. I came inside to plug it in.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Oh, you had no plug outside.
No. I didn't realize how much gravy. And I didn't want to interrupt it. It was like 4%. I was like, this is too good. I can't go inside. And so I just plugged it in. So anyway, finish your thought. I'm sorry, brother.
Oh, yeah. What the heck was I talking about?
You were talking about the CDC and how.
Oh, yeah. Right. So they pay these guys at Harvard or, you know, give them a grant. And they say, we want you to, like, you know, measure the adverse events from vaccines and see, you know, does it match up with what they're reporting at VAERS? And I think they figured it would show that, oh yeah, they're capturing everything. And so they like started looking at this throughout the entire Harvard health system, which is pretty big, like several hospitals, lots of clinics. It's a big business.
Yeah.
And what they found is tons of adverse events from vaccines. And they said basically that the official reporting, the VAERS system, only represents about 1% of the total vaccine injuries based on their research. And so they told the CDC this, and the CDC says, okay, stop what you're doing. Don't publish and just forget about it.
Yeah.
So, wow, but the only thing you can find is like a newspaper article or, you know, an interview where they report this.
So is there an end to this, or what do you see coming down the pipe? Because could this thing just start crumbling from general knowledge and people saying no? Because I feel like people used to be a lot more trusting with medicine than they are now. Or is this just a machine that's going to keep on cranking? Like, what do you see coming? Because people despise Bill Gates now. You know, if you look under his Instagram, they don't have enough heart attack gun bullets for everybody. There's like 50,000 comments that are like, you'll never touch me. You stay away from my children. You know, it's, and I never knew that as a kid. As a kid, my mom didn't vaccinate me. because she was woke to some stuff. But everyone I knew got vaccinated. No one even thought about it, you know?
Yeah, I was vaccinated.
I got one flu shot, so I'm in the club. I have been poisoned.
Oh, you got one vaccine or something else?
What? I got one flu shot because my wife was pregnant. My wife was pregnant, and I didn't ever have a hatred for anti-vaxxers. I was just like, everyone needs to relax. It's fine. And so they were like, oh, this will lower your chance of getting the flu this year, and you don't give it to your wife. And I was like, great. And that's the only time I've ever been vaccinated. But I, you know, immediately after, I just developed breasts and became homosexual. So I don't, I'm just kidding. But so, you know.
Well, you know, it can cause infertility, right? That's Bill Gates' strategy, right?
Is that his point?
Well, he said he made a comment at some talk, and this was before the pandemic started, but it was basically through vaccine policy and family planning, his goal was to reduce the world's population by 15%, right? Like a billion people.
Yeah, he's just a sick little puppy. I definitely have crazy emotions about the fact that my kids got vaccinated, but I think it'll be okay. You know, they're real healthy, good kids, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I have the same dilemma because I vaccinated them up to a point, you know, before I realized this and looked at it. Because, you know, in medical school, they tell you that it's like the miracle of the 20th century.
Exactly. I was like,
you know, how are you going to turn down a miracle?
I thought, I remember being, you know, people, Chris Rock used to always joke, there's no money in the cure. And it's like, and everyone's like, the last disease they cured was polio. And now looking back, I'm like, they created all the diseases.
Yeah. No, the polio went away like several years before the Sabin vaccine, because, you know, it was like a year before the Salk vaccine. They were racing to make a vaccine because they needed the opportunity to, you know, get in there and say that they figured it out. And the Salk vaccine was rushed, and then it basically caused a bunch of bad, you know, I don't remember exactly what it caused, but it made people really sick, and they just pulled it. And then it took two more years before the Sabin vaccine was available. And by that time, there were no cases of polio because they stopped using lead arsenate and DDT. And that's what really caused the paralysis every summer. You know, it was in the summer because that's when they sprayed the crops with it.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, everything was there to match it up. But they, you know, at the time, nobody considered it as a possibility.
Yeah. And same with Gulf War syndrome, where it was all the anthrax vaccine. I'm convinced that Spanish flu had something to do with the first World War I vaccine, because everybody that got it were like young men.
I mean, that's an excellent point, because all the soldiers returning from the war were all, you know, vaccinated to go back into the country. And many of them got sick. There's some good evidence on that. You know, David Parker and Dawn Lester talk about that in their book. So that's really good stuff. But, you know, to answer what you were saying before, like, I think there have been an acceleration of people opening up to the truth, you know, waking up. And it seems to be even more in the last couple of weeks. But I think that's why, you know, the elite, or whatever you want to call them, accelerated their plan. You know, they were getting desperate because they weren't going to be able to do it. And they're trying really hard. I mean, this is, you know, there's a lot of clever aspects to this whole current, you know, staged pandemic. Yeah. That are really, you know, manipulating people. Like, and I don't think even there's going to be, like, I know some countries like Poland and one of the other European countries, like, passed laws providing for mandatory vaccines in this kind of a situation. But, you know, I think they're going to make it voluntary at first, because people are going to be begging for it almost, because they're going to be, you know, tired of the lockdowns and stuff, where they're going to say, if you take the vaccine, you won't have to stay at home. You know, you'll be allowed out, and the unvaccinated people will have to stay home. Or they'll use something like that to make it, you know, coerced, but still voluntary technically. And then maybe later down the road, they'll make it mandatory. And they've got this, you know, the plan is that they want, you know, us to have some kind of biometric monitoring. Yeah. You know, that like that invisible ink tattoo, which is the Bill Gates technology, or just like a smartphone app. And there are some places already doing this. Like in Korea and Taiwan, They're piloting these programs where, you know, it's like tracks you. And if you go through the neighborhood where there are people with reported cases of COVID, then, you know, you get a red light on your app and you can't go into your office building at work, or you can't access public transportation, you know, because you'd get people sick from an imaginary illness.
Yeah, that's why I see it's just like two roads are emerging, you know, because one of our slogans that we keep saying is they can try, you know, it's like, well, they want to. It's like, they can try, because it does feel desperate and rushed. I think the New World Order is actually falling completely apart. The Kissinger plans of the world is an absolute disaster, and it doesn't functionally work. So I think they're really, really pushing nonsense at this point. And a good wizard spell doesn't wake up this many people. Like 9/11, I was beating on the war drum like everybody else. And the amount of people that saw that as a lie was so small. And now it's way bigger. And I think that they could get to a point where they have their chips and their ink and their patent 60606 live action role play nonsense. But I think that that world will just keep getting smaller. Like, if you want to ride on a subway for free or whatever, they're not going to be able to keep people in their houses. They just aren't. It just isn't going to happen. And people, you know, every time the tyrant pushes, like goes all in like this, the blowback is insanity. You know, people are just like not having it, you know, that like Bill Gates just made about 50 million people anti-vaxxers.
I definitely hope that's true. And, you know, people are like, there's been protests this weekend all over the place.
Yeah. What do you see with your friends and former colleagues and stuff? Like, how do they treat you?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's very polarized because, like some former colleagues that I was good friends with have like now totally written me off and, you know, told me off, you know, on Facebook or whatever, because, you know, I mean, if they listen to what I say and they know I'm a smart guy, so they know I did my research and that there's going to be something compelling. And if they risk looking at that and then realize that it's true, then they have to turn their whole life upside down, you know, and they just are not ready to do that at this moment in time. That's so they exactly have to basically cut ties to avoid that conflict.
I saw the same thing. Yeah, totally.
So I understand that. And, you know, I accept it. And I've gotten a whole bunch of, you know, new friends as a result. So like in my community, like I live in a ultra progressive liberal kind of university neighborhood. And so most of my neighbors, even before anything was recommended or mandated, they're like voluntarily staying at home or won't let their kids touch my kids or come go near my kids. You know, it's been really tough on my kids. They've been lonely. Right. You know, I mean, at least they have each other. We did get one play date this week, finally. And there's one other kid that is approved for a play date. So, but on the other hand, like there are some people that I was sort of was acquaintances with and wasn't sure that they were really open to the full truth, but like I knew in some areas they were open to things. And now, since this has happened, and especially like after they saw some of my interviews and whatnot, they're now totally like open to everything, like waking up fully. And yeah. So we've been having these like twice a week, like clandestine get-togethers. And, you know, it started off with five of us, and then there was eight of us. And now I think on Tuesday, there's going to be like 10 or 11. So
dude,
it's
that's
really
the
exciting.
Blowback, dude. That's the blowback. It's like, that's how you make strong communities, is you persecute them. You know, like the whole, you can't come in our store without a mask. I mean, that's the myth of the antebellum South black man. You know, it's like, we don't want your kind here. It's like, if you're logically consistent and you don't hate yourself and want to hide your face in shame, you're the new, you know, minority group. And what people don't realize is minority groups can develop really strong, awesome communities. And in fact, it's probably one of the things that makes some of them thrive, because there's an opposition where it's like, well, we're not those guys. So then there's more draw to community, more draw to big families, more draw to survival. And I see it as awesome, because even some of my friends at some of these alphabet agencies, you know, they've never gotten the order for the heart attack gun. But they're even like, what is this? You know, some of them have told their superiors where they're like, I'll never force a vaccine on somebody. Because a lot of people have had friends who have had kids die from that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's unlike COVID-19, who the only person anyone knows is a 90-year-old cancer patient. It's like it's like vaccines have damaged so many children. There's been so much injustice that people aren't going to play ball anymore. There's too many there's too many mama bears ready to pounce, you know?
Well, I got to say, you're like so right about that. And it's the parents of the kids who have been injured and maimed and killed by these vaccines that are really responsible for so much of this awakening into the medical fascism. And I'll tell you that the parents of these kids are some of the most knowledgeable people about health. Like, you know, when I talk to them, like there's nothing I can mention practically that they already don't know something about.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's impressive. And, you know, I think that's the way it should be. When something happens to your child, you know, you need, that's your top priority, and you're going to put all your effort into that. Right. And that's one silver lining about this current lockdown situation. And maybe it's helping people actually see the truth a little bit better, because they're around their kids now. They have to live with them, right?
Yeah, yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And I've heard some people at work talk about, like, they're like, you know, I never considered this, but I actually might do homeschooling even after the schools reopen.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, even my ex-wife said something like this. And, you know, I was hoping, because I really want to homeschool the kids, and I'm loving having them home. You know, I wish I wasn't so busy now, but seriously, it's, you know, it's the way family should be. Like, you shouldn't have strangers raising your kids.
Exactly, dude. That my theory, I didn't get a degree in psychology or anything, but I'm real knowledgeable in it because of my history of being a stand-up comedian. And I think that what it is people are wearing masks because of their shame, because of what the compliance to it. This real fear of pedophilia, I think, has to do with public school and has to do with not having a connection with your kids. It's almost like satanic panic in the 80s, when so many of these moms were first leaving their children to work, and they had this feeling like something is horribly wrong. Like, why are my children gone? Who's going to touch my children? You know, and it's like that now with so many of these panics, because it's like, that's why I always tell people, like, what are you doing in your life? Like, why are you feeling this way? Why are you panicked? Why are you depressed? Like, what's your contribution? Like, what's your, because I think that's what's causing the masks, is they're wearing the masks and they want the poison because of what they've done, like the responsibilities that they've given up. Like, everybody should know alchemical medicine. Everyone should know their rights. Everyone should know how the law works, how the water system works, like what's going in their body. And people have been on this autopilot. And so when these things come in, they're like, cover your face, you know, fear. And I really believe that is because people have given up their sovereignty, their autonomy, their freedom. And now they're waking up to it, because the beast is slow. It's very slow moving. It's very, it's David and Goliath, you know, it's very, if you have an accurate sling, you know, you can pop that bastard in the face and he can't really react very quickly, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's what's made it so hard for people to see for so long. And now that it's accelerating, you know, it's much more transparent. And, you know, you got some really good points about the masks, because there is a big shame component. You know, I mean, even as a psychiatrist, if I see someone with some kind of hairstyle where they're covering their face or they're wearing big, dark glasses, right, it's like, you know, that shame is a part of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're telling us that we are going to make other people sick. And it's like, what does that mean? That means, like, be ashamed of your own body.
Yep.
Because your own body is diseased and it's going to kill other people. You know, it's a horrible, horrible message. And, you know, I mean, and now I'm starting to feel sorry for people wearing masks. Like, at first I was just really pissed off.
Yeah,
I wanted to just go and yank them off people, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, I didn't.
Yeah.
But I did talk to a few people. And, you know, James True was into this, you know, mask shaming for a while. But you know, we realized that some people are just not capable of seeing things. They just, you know, they're so entranced and that they can't snap out of it for whatever reason. And, you know, it's okay to have compassion for those people. And, you know, they're going to be the ones that are probably hurt the most, because
exactly,
they're not standing up for themselves.
Exactly. Yeah, it's almost like seeing somebody in a wheelchair, you know, at this point. We call it prayerplegic, where it's like, it's a spiritual injury, you know, because somebody is so fearful. And I some people are like, wow, should I just wear the mask to fit in? I'm like, would you sit in a wheelchair if someone told you to, even if you could walk? It's like, that's the question. Like, of course not.
Yeah.
Like, don't, you know, this isn't, just don't accept that narrative. And it's all narratives and they can't do anything, you know? And so what are some final thoughts for people for how to deal with this world moving forward? Like, you know, like, what should people do? Just like, how, what's the best way to avoid the vaccine? What's the best way to, you know, just deal with this? And what do you think is the weaknesses of the machine right now? Like, what do you see failing? What do you see the bad guys doing right now that won't work?
Well, you know, I mean, you hit it earlier on when you said, like, they need our consent.
Yeah.
Right. So I think the most important thing we can do is to not provide that consent. And so that means, you know, whatever we're asked to do that's ridiculous, don't do it. So, like, I don't follow any stay-at-home order. I don't follow any mask recommendations or requirements. Like, at work, they told me that we're going to have to, like, because Cuomo has an executive order that says, you know, people serving the public or whatever have to wear a mask. And, you know, I'm a psychiatrist. I need to see someone's facial expression to relate to them. I can't, you know, work if they're wearing a mask. And so I told them that I'm not going to be wearing a mask, and I'm going to, you know, on Tuesday, I'm going to put a sign on my door that's saying, you're not welcome if you're wearing a mask, because I can't work that way.
Love it, brother.
And I don't know what the consequences of that are going to be for me, but whatever they are, I'm willing to accept them, because I'm not going to give up my freedom.
Exactly.
You know, so if they ask me to take a test, I'm not going to take a test. If they ask me to get a vaccine, I'm not going to do that. Now, I am working on legal strategies to try and deal with that more effectively if vaccines become mandatory. And I mean, I want to have a strategy actually just for my kids for the regular school mandatory vaccines. So there's a group that's affiliated with Cal Washington, who's a great legal mind. It's called InPower, InPower, movement.com. And so people can definitely go to their website and see their strategies based on a notice of liability. And I think that's a very promising strategy. It's been successful in other areas. But I'm not, you know, giving up there, because I'm trying to figure out every possibility and every angle. And so I'm working, you know, on that, and I'm working on other things. And, you know, we don't have to rush, because there's not going to be, they don't have a vaccine yet. So we have some time to prepare. But I think in the meantime, you know, like, take good care of yourself. Get out in the sunshine, you know, or even if it's gray and cloudy, get outside. Right. Take your shoes and socks off and walk barefoot on the earth.
That's right.
Get some exercise. Hug your loved ones. You know, physical touch is really important, and don't give that up right now as much as possible. You know, do your own thing, like, live your own life. Don't be afraid. Don't be intimidated. Don't be influenced by what other people do. Make your own decisions, and you'll find that that's going to serve you well, and you're going to feel empowered and autonomous, you know, like you're in charge of yourself, which is the way it should be.
Yeah, because there's many, many fates worse than anything they're threatening you with. You know, it's, people would call people like us very brave and courageous, and I'll take the compliment, but I don't think people have really sat down and thought about what they're giving up if they don't do that. Where if someone can just make you wear a mask or inject you with fetus cells, like, they can do anything to you at that point. And so holding your ground is the smart move. It's the safest thing you can do, you know?
Listen, I would be, you know, have more fear if I was just sitting around and passively, you know, hoping that it's all going to end, and then just be willing to cooperate with whatever I was asked.
Exactly.
I think I would be in much more fear, you know. So if you call this bravery or not, you know, it's like, I'm not as afraid, because, you know, I know, like, that whatever consequences I have for what I'm doing is going to be not nearly as bad as the consequence of just letting the system take over and make that our permanent way of living. You know, I'd rather die than allow that to happen.
Oh yeah. And the irony is when you get to that point, you typically don't die. You end up crushing. Like, your name, your bear name, you're Dr. Crushman Bear. That's what everybody in the chat keeps saying. It's so ironic. It's almost like when you have the will to do it, when you have the will to die on the hill, God is like, okay, now you can leave the hill. It's fascinating shit. where it's like the people that I keep seeing dying. You know, another thing we keep talking about is you're your own hitman. You know, we can talk about the heart attack gun and all that, but in reality, the thing that typically kills people is despair and unhealthy living and fear and depression and anxiety, where they start self-consuming with these appetites and these addictions until they're dead. And the whole time they're looking in the bushes for Mossad or CIA or something, but in reality, it's their fear, and they just start manifesting these diseases, you know? And I think that that's a real thing that people can take to heart, where, you know, you're your worst enemy and your greatest advocate, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, it's another hermetic principle here, right? As above, so below, as without, so within. If you are looking at the system and buying everything and, you know, falling hook, line, and sinker, you're going to also apply that to your own internal situation, right? And you're just going to not even think about taking care of yourself, right? Because it's like you're just supposed to be passive worker. You go to work, you come home, you have entertainment, you know, and pizza and beer and soda, and then you go back to work. And that, you know, that's all there is. Never stop to think, what am I doing? Yeah. Why am I doing it? You know?
Yeah, and we're filled with so many cells. You know, James Treo has a great way of describing that. They're like our army. There's trillions of these cells just waiting for orders. And when you betray yourself, they betray you back. Like if you treat your body and your soul like you're just a cog in a wheel for a guy who hates you, they're just going to quit their job, you know? And if you are like, no, I won't poison you, I won't lie to you, I will be strong for you, your body empowers you, you know? It's like you have clear thoughts, your life improves. It's a profound thing, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree.
You're getting so much support in this chat. Can you tell the people where they can find you and give their thumbs up and support and, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, you can definitely find me on YouTube. I have a channel there. The show is called Medicamentum Authentica. And I've got my website up and running now. It's andrewkaufmanmd.com, 1F, 1N, and like MD, like medical doctor. And, you know, I definitely have, I do some stuff on Facebook too, so you can find me there. And, you know, through my website, people can contact me or request a consultation or interview, or some people are actually contributing to research, which has really been valuable, and people are doing some excellent work for me. So I really, you know, in collaboration, not for me. So I really appreciate that kind of effort. And I'm encouraging other people to, you know, put stuff out there too. You know, if some people have a good idea and they describe it to me, I'm like, you know, make a 10-minute video and I'll put it on my channel. So, because, you know, getting the information is the most important thing out there to people who want to learn what's really going on.
It's true. And right now there's 4,500 people here on a Sunday evening listening about what medicine really is. And I think, and then another 50,000, 100,000 will listen. I think that is, you know, I know I keep making fun of the heart attack gun, but there's no real, you know, back in the 70s, they would have put someone like me in a padded room for some of the things I say, and no one would have even known. And now I believe the Great Awakening is leading to the mask of shame and not the other way around. So I think that we're looking at a really promising future if people just, you know, crush like Dr. Crushman Bear.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking at things that way myself. You know, you can look at the future in different ways, but if you look at it with anticipation and excitement about the possibilities, boy, I'll tell you, that's going to serve you so much better, and it'll energize you to actually make that come about.
Yeah, when I was a kid, at any minute Russia was going to destroy us in a nuclear holocaust. That's my whole life. Like it was, I remember it was every day they're about to destroy you, because I'm from Oswego, New York, near the nuclear power plant. So they're always like, "Oh, you're about to be incinerated." And so I know their game plan of trauma and then mold us into these shiny, happy slaves. And I just think that if you don't kick the beast, it doesn't even care. Like you can heal people. I can make people laugh, and they just keep trying to poison retards. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, it's true. Like, I mean, you know, there's very few people in my area that would come to me, because they're all, you know, using the regular system. And I work with a few people locally, and they basically weren't really willing to, you know, really do everything. You know, it was like everything was inconvenient and, you know, that kind of attitude, like, oh, maybe I'll just go back to the regular doctor and, you know, keep being sick and suffering. But this community, like these awakened people like that I've been working with, it's incredible. They actually say, no, I want to do more. Like, tell me, what's the ultimate way to be healthy? Like, I'll tweak anything, you know, and it's like that's the attitude that's going to get you to be in, you know, at the top shape. You know, being able to do everything you want in life and living a long, healthy life.
I love
it. So that's all people need to do.
Well, I know it's late on the East Coast, and I'm sure you've been going pretty strong. So it's been a pleasure, man. I love that we're buddies now.
Yeah, same here, man. It was really fun. This is like one of the most relaxing chats that I've had in a while.
It's my lab coat. You know I'm a man of science. All right. Well, keep rocking and let me know if there's anything I can do to help. And I'm sure you'll be getting a lot of new fans from this conversation.
Oh, fantastic, man.
All right, dude. Talk soon. Later, Dr. Crushman Bear. All right, peace.
Take care.
All right, guys. That was Dr. Crushman. Any final thoughts? That was really fun. Great chat. Yeah. Thanks for the interview, Owen. Anytime. Great stream, Owen and Dr. Crushman. Can he come I missed it. Going very fast. Crushing. Good stuff. Thanks, BB. Awesome. Anytime. How dare you have a doctor on the stream? I know. And how funny is it that, like, one of the best cures for autism is, like, turpentine? Low doses, guys. And I'm not telling you what dose. I'm not even telling you to take it. I'm just ladling gravy. But just remember, not art store bullshit, pine gum spirit turpentine. Just look at the reviews on Amazon. There's like thousands of people like, this made me not gay anymore. And everybody's like, it's poison. You have to die with the pills. Did you get my Josh Garrell's email? No, I don't think so. Maybe. I get a lot of emails. Thank you, Owen. That was awesome. How dare you wear a NASA coat? What do you mean? I'm clearly a man of science. My son is autistic, and I'll be trying this. Sweet. And also, autism isn't the end of the world. You know, it's fine. It's like everybody has some shit. But you know, it is what it is. And I just think healthy living, I think you can grow out of some of this shit. BB, I wasn't with you when you came at vaccines or viruses or corona being and faking gay, but with that lab coat, by God, you're right. Exactly. Only thing I'd like to use letters. Oh, Dimitri, relax. Owen, did you see the podcast with Whitney and Tim Dillon? What do you think about those? I don't know. I listen to almost nothing anymore. Doing one team. All right. Autism can be a gift. If it is a like mine. Yeah. Totally. Dude. Some of the biggest oppositions in life make people really strong. I just don't like that people are poisoning each little kids and saying that it's medicine. And I'm just one of those people, like people be like, why would you speak up? It's like, do you not know what the alternative is? What kind of man? I know what kind of man. I see them all over the place. They don't have gravy ladles. They don't have tribes. They don't have families. They're just useless. It's like, what kind of man finds out information like this and doesn't say anything? Like, how, that's why some of these people, I think, just march to their death, or they just live horrible lives because they haven't stood for anything. They've just been scared and squirting. My husband's granny from the hills of Arkansas used to have him take turpentine when he was a kid. Yes. Squirt boys. Vitamin K injection. They have whack or calluses. Yes. Dr. Crushman carries a large ladle. Yes. All right. Thank you for introducing the doctor. That was great. Yeah, and he went to MIT and Duke. And well, he's probably just some quack. That dude's facing intense ostracism because he knows the other alternative. He gets it. I was thinking about something too. I love my autistic son with all my heart. He's always happy and cheerful and putting smiles on other people's faces. Yeah, it's great. I just don't like that it's forced. What was I just going to say? Oh, yeah. Want to know one of the best handbooks for dealing with the government? This is so ironic, but this is how it operates. The DARE program. Just substitute drugs for everything else. Remember the broken record, just say no? Remember that whole program? They did it about something retarded, obviously, but the entire playbook can be applied to everything in life. I still remember the methods where it's just like just saying the broken record where you just keep saying no over and over again until they leave you alone and all that. Rethink about the DARE program and just apply it to the machine. Breaking news, Joe Rogan has been diagnosed gay for butts. Yes. DARE reverse psychology. Oh, yeah, totally reverse psychology. Dude, there was... what are some of the ones that they said in there in the DARE program? Does anybody remember? The DARE people in my neighborhood were dealers. No, but do you remember... Honestly, though, do you remember any of the DARE thing? You always say the real N-word is no. Right, right. But, like... There was like, drugs are real good, Savannah. No is one of my all-time favorite words. We had stop, drop, and roll. That was for fires. Oh, by the way, trying to get rid of viruses to stop disease would be like executing firefighters to stop fire. And I know it's daunting. I know it's daunting because it's everywhere. It appears no one understands it, but people do understand it. Millions of us understand it. Oh, marijuana is a gateway drug. Yeah, which is also a thing where you got to remember that don't give them an inch. Not one inch. They had us role playing, selling to other kids in class. Right, but dare only you can smoke a bunch of weed. Hugs, not drugs. Drugs are really expensive. Just say no. How dare you? Program is a great sketch. How dare, yeah. All right, guys, I'm going to go. If you'd like to support the stream, P.O. Box 727, Gig Harbor, Washington, 98335. Subscribe to unauthorized.tv, unbearablesmerchandise.com, bitchute.com/Owen Benjamin Comedy. And again, don't worry about this shit. You know, it's like people can start, like when my computer died, I saw in the chat, people were like, they got him. They got, dude, no, no. Like even the heart attack gun talk, I made it funny, but watch out for like ghost stories and spook stories. It's crippling and so gay. You know, it's like people will kill other people when they're about to be exposed and like put in prison or a rival cartel person. They don't just kill dudes that suggest you eat minerals. Just trust me on this because it'll keep you in fear and panic. It's a control mechanism. And I understand, you know, there's a lot of spook stories out there. But like the big pharma kills are typically other groups trying to get their turf. It's right out of like hood rat behavior. Or someone's ratting on them to go to do like time in prison. Other than that, there's so much risk to that type of shit. And they're so busy and so not interested in a group of people that want to heal themselves that just don't worry about that shit. Does that make sense? Lots of homeopathic doctors have been killed. Okay, Mama J Bear. So why don't you go and get super scared? A lot of everyone have been killed. I don't know what to tell you guys. I saw that in the chat too. It's like 80 doctors have been murdered. I was watching in the chat at the same time, people saying they got to Owen. He brought up Bill Gates. He said the name and dude, it isn't real. Maybe they've killed some doctors. Maybe there was doctors that were encroaching on the turf. I'm not saying that they were healing people, but it was taking away margins. The machine doesn't have a soul. They look at profits and losses. They don't look at like, I really don't like this boy. He makes me sad. They don't even notice you. And every time someone dies, it isn't a fucking murder. Unless I die of a heart attack, then obviously it was a murder. Owen would be killed before any of us. It's not going to happen. Easy. No one's getting killed. Want to know what would have killed me? My alcoholic lifestyle where I used to go to sleep at 2 in the morning and then the next day, 8. And I'd have to be up at 4 a.m. to do fucking morning radio. And then, dude, it's all good. The life is prison for the believer. All right, rollerblading accident. More reason to practice what those doctors preach to honor them. Okay, Dimitri. Dimitri, you can't even not type like a fucking paragraph every 8 seconds. How about you honor me by just not constantly writing shit in the chat that pisses people off? I've become fond of you, so I really don't want to just ban you, but like, how about you honor me, Dimitri, and forget about the magical doctors for a second? Spells grow. Like, Amy, the only time Amy's ever worried about me dying is working to death. You know that? Amy, tuned into me, in love with me, father of children, light of her life in the home. The only time she's ever showed any concern about me dying, and I've, like, went to L.A. to do talks during this shit, and the only time was when we were talking to someone who lost his dad from working too much. And she looked at me like, and I was like, I crush. That's the only time she's ever like showed fear of my death. Because she's smart. She isn't dumb like a lot of you fucking people. How can I become a hard worker like BB? No, I work like a little too hard. Like if I die of a heart attack, it's probably not the gun. No, it's the gun. It's Hillary. Is Terp rough on your way? I don't know. I'm just wearing a medical doctor outfit. I'm not an actual doctor. I'm not responsible for your health. I'm just letting you know that there's other shit out there. My grandpa used to always tell me to put Vicks Vapo on it. You live to be 93. This is great. But didn't he get hit by the heart attack gun? God is in control. And only God can allow your death. Only God allows death. God is responsible for your life and your death. That's it. No more fear now, right? No more worrying. All right. P.O. Box 727, Gig Harbor, Washington, 93.35 and unauthorized.tv. I will see you guys tomorrow at 9:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And go give Dr. Kaufman some love. Let him know that the Bears heard him loud and clear. All right. Be fruitful and multiply. Don't be fruity and blow a guy.